right, and welcome back, everyone, to your crypto market rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the world of cryptocurrency, from the technicals on the chart to the fundamentals in the news. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And man, we're having a volatile week. And let me just say, this is going to be a massive week, perhaps one of the most historic weeks in cryptocurrency history, because the halving is just a few days away. We're getting a lot of pre-halving chop. The prices are going haywire. Doesn't matter if it's Bitcoin, doesn't matter if it's altcoins. Heck, it doesn't matter if it's precious metals or stocks. We're going to be talking about it all in today's episode, because there is volatility and opportunity everywhere. But Tivo, how are you holding up over there? You know, quite an emotional roller coaster of a week.
Absolutely.
Right?
The volatility is here, like you said, across the board. It doesn't matter what asset you're talking about. And we're going to get into why some of the catalyst there with, you know, just worldly news happened over the weekend and caused some scared selling and transferring to US dollars across the board in every asset class. But doing okay. You know, it's something that, you know, you got to be prepared for. And, you know, in this game, there's no easy up only paths, and things happen that you don't see coming. And that's definitely something that happened over the weekend. But in a broader picture, it's nothing that you shouldn't have been prepared for. Because if you did listen last week, Brendan was giving you the Bitcoin technical analysis, and he gave you the range of kind of the squeeze that he was monitoring. And he said, hey, like, this squeeze looks like an uptrend. When it breaks out, we're looking at new all-time highs. But, you know, his quote wasn't, you know, don't be surprised if we don't see levels that are lower than this. And we're going to play that clip right here.
I think we can get some choppy price action. I mean, dare I say, I think that we can even go lower than we are currently priced at, and I wouldn't be all that shocked. In that preparation, in these dips, that's where I'm going to be really excited about buying. So, yeah, I mean, as we talked about in the clip, the low end of that range was right around $62,000. And coincidentally enough, that's exactly where we are consolidating at now, Tivo. So I think we can actually go ahead and throw up the chart here, and that's what I'm going to do. Kind of kick us off with things pretty hot this week, but it's well deserved.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
And so when we look at the chart and what's happening here, you know, we have kind of been consolidating around the bottom of this range, as we showed in that clip, saying, hey, what, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a retracement deeper down here. And that's exactly what we did. And so now we've been floating around here for about 5 days. We came down here initially on Saturday, bounced right off the zone. And then after Saturday, we saw Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and now Wednesday. We're still consolidating around that $62,000 zone. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that the range up until this point has still held, and it's about a $10,000 range overall. Now, the bottom end of this range is right around $60,000, and the top end of this range is right around $70,000. What this means is that there's about a $10,000 area where Bitcoin is going from support to resistance to support to resistance, back towards support, back to resistance, and it's chopping around here. Now, for the people who can't see what we're talking about on the charts here, you're going to be able to see all the visuals on the YouTube channel. That is Crypto 101 Podcast on YouTube. And you can see all the charts and everything that we're referencing there if you are an Apple Podcast or Spotify listener. Now, when we're talking about this $10,000 range on Bitcoin, like, this isn't anything new. It's been doing this for about a month and a half, Tivo, where we've just been going from 60,000 to 70, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And now we're at the bottom of this range. Now, these are the opportunity zones, so to say. Like, this is the pivotal zone, because in the same way that if we broke out to the upside above 74, 75,000, Bitcoin would have some serious room to like really run here. In the same way, if Bitcoin breaks down to a lower low, this is another opportunity zone where it has the potential to kind of move deeper. And when I say deeper, you know, the first main support for Bitcoin over here isn't until around 52,000-53,000, which means that Bitcoin could break and fall about $10,000 before catching on a significant support level. Now, after we get around, you know, the upper 40s, low 50s, this is where a lot of support is going to kick in. We've seen this be a pretty historical consolidation zone, especially to like the end of last year, beginning of this year. So that's why when I say I'm looking for any kind of consolidation or support zones, it's more towards like the high 40s, low 50s. And if we break here, we could be in for a little bit of a ride. Now, does that mean that the bull market's over? Does that mean that the crypto market's dead? Does that mean that we're going to go into a multi-year bear market? And I think the answer there is absolutely not. In fact, if we look at like some of the stuff that we actually referenced last week, it was saying, hey, Bitcoin, you know, historically can dip 20, 30, 40%. And we looked at that in like multiple different weekly rundown episodes where we said Bitcoin's very likely to move down 20, 30, 40% inside of this halving catalyst parabolic style bull market that a lot of us are familiar with. And it's done it about a dozen times over the course of every upwards market cycle. And so if we measure where the top was to where we're at today, it's only about 15 to 16%. So it's easy for us to get upset and be like, well, you know, why is everything so bad? When in reality, you know, a 15% dip during one of these parabolic market cycles is actually a pretty tamed and calm one at that. And so if we were to actually measure this out to say, well, what would a 20, 30, 40% dip look like? Well, that's going to bring us right down to the area that we are talking about, the low 50s, high 40s, pretty close to the 200-day moving average as well inside of this zone, while all being a pretty average move. And it's not something that I'm putting completely off the table. Now, does this mean I'm going out there and I'm placing shorts and I'm betting that the market's going to go down? Absolutely not. You know, I'm a firm believer that the trend is our friend. Bitcoin pivoted at the, you know, end of 2022. And ever since this, it has been going up and up and up and up. And the trend is very clearly up here. Higher highs, higher lows. And I think the ultimate trend is still very much intact. It's not a market that I want to bet is going to go down, but it's something that I'm going to prepare accordingly for. So I'm going to hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And that's kind of where this area comes in for Bitcoin. This is a really pivotal and key level because ever since we broke out to this, this has been the area where Bitcoin tends to bounce at. So with us kind of coming back down here, you know, if Bitcoin breaks to the lower lows here, you know, kind of breaks the $59,000 to $61,000 support level right around here, then this is where I'm going to be a little bit nervous, expecting lower prices. But you better believe that that's an area that I'm going to be comfortable buying. In fact, I was even doing a little bit of buying right around here. You know, we had this first initial move down on Saturday, kind of to the bottom of this support area. And I saw that, and that was an area that I was waiting to accumulate more. And I did. You know, I got my hands on things like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Solana and some Maker and a couple other things as well. I think that there was a lot of opportunity to be made there. But if we dip more, you know, hey, I'm going to wait for the next support zone, and you better bet I'm going to be picking up some more crypto here, because I think that there is opportunity not only on the big things like Bitcoin and Ethereum, but also on altcoins as well. And so, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, Tivo, you know, I want to loop you in here in just a second, but man, altcoins have been kind of bleeding, kind of running. And I think it freaked a lot of people out. Did you see some of that over
the
weekend?
Yes, it was a pure number go down, and it was sad to see. The social media, when we're going up, it's like this huge flurry of everybody's making money, everybody's a genius, number go up, yeah. And it's just so interesting, the psychology of just a normal human, of when everything's going wrong, like you definitely see some funny memes maybe or people talking about it, but it gets a lot quieter on the timeline. And like I'm looking at the prices being like, holy crap, like this thing's moving like crazy. And then I'm looking at kind of Twitter and, you know, the socials that I keep track of to see, you know, who's talking about what, and it's noticeably quiet, and it's just people licking their wounds, and they're probably can't even tweet because they're staring at their portfolio number. It's like a slot machine just rolling downward.
Yeah, I mean, we were joking about it yesterday, and the amount that your portfolio can change even on these kind of moves is just astonishing. You're like, up, oh, and you know, there goes the down payment on a house or whatever it may be. And it's going to vary from person to person, but you know, I think it's safe to say that any person that holds a significant amount of altcoins here is feeling the pain. You know, you don't have to be a millionaire to do it. I think everyone is feeling a bit of the pain so long as they hold altcoins here. And the main reason for that is that altcoins typically move around 2 to 3 times faster than Bitcoin on average. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that when we're in the uptrend and when everything's doing really, really good, it's a positive thing. So this is a double-edged sword. So in the uptrend here, you know, let's just say that Bitcoin, you know, moved roughly 88%. So let's just say it's 100% moved to the upside. Well, that means that a lot of altcoins might have moved 2 to 300% to the upside, while Bitcoin only did 100%. And I think that we can look at some of these other charts and kind of see this and say, hey, you know, this one outperformed Bitcoin. We can also look at like Stacks here recently doing a 200% move. The list goes on, right? There's cryptos that are moving 2 to 3 times faster than Bitcoin in the uptrend. Now, when the down moves happen, like we're looking at right now, some of these pullbacks, and Bitcoin over the weekend, as we measure from, you know, over the course of like Friday to Saturday, Bitcoin fell by roughly 15%. Now, if we go and we look at some other altcoins, let's just use Solana as an example here. Over the course of Friday to Saturday, top to bottom, Solana fell by about 30%. We can go and we can look at AVAX, very similar story. AVAX fell by about 38%. We can look at Stacks. Stacks fell by about 32%. We can look at Matic. Matic fell by about 34%. The list goes on. Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, again, it goes back to the idea of altcoins are moving down and upwards about 2 to 3 times what Bitcoin is doing. So when Bitcoin fell by 15%, we're seeing a lot of altcoins fall by 30, 40%. And you know, that's just the nature of them. Again, it's a double-edged sword. When we were moving up, everyone's like, altcoins, 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 and was getting all excited about it. But you have to understand that it's a two-way street. When the markets move down, altcoins are going to be more volatile than Bitcoin. When the markets move up, they're going to be more positively impacted by some of this, you know, price action. And the reason for that is that, you know, altcoins are smaller in market cap. These are assets that require smaller amounts of money to move them more significantly. You know, with Bitcoin being a $1.2 trillion asset, you know, putting $1 billion into it is going to impact the Bitcoin chart a lot less than it would impact, like, you know, something smaller. Let's just use maybe like Avalanche, for example, right? If we were to put $1 billion into Avalanche, it's going to drastically impact the price chart a lot more than it would the Bitcoin chart, because Bitcoin is a $1.2 trillion asset and Avalanche is only, you know, a $12.5 billion asset. So Bitcoin's significantly larger, and that's what's going to ultimately kind of determine some of the effect here. So yeah, I mean, lots of stuff happening. And I think with this kind of drastic downturn that we saw, or this more like volatile downturn that we saw, Bitcoin dominance actually skyrocketed to new multi-year highs, TiVo. And what this means is that Bitcoin, in comparison to pretty much the altcoin market, saying, you know, how much of the crypto space is made up by Bitcoin, that shot up above 57%. And that's the highest point that we've seen in over 3 years. So if we zoom out on this chart, the the last time that we saw Bitcoin dominance at 57% was after it was, you know, kind of just free falling downwards in the last parabolic market cycle. All the way back to, I mean, what was this, April, the beginning of April of 2021. So it's been over 3 years since we've seen Bitcoin dominance this high. And again, one of the things that I want to reiterate is that Bitcoin dominance always climbs, and historically, at least, it has always climbed going into a bull market. And what do you know, this time is no different. Bitcoin dominance has been climbing and climbing and climbing leading into this market cycle, just like it did in 2021, just like it did in, you know, the cycle before that, just like it did over in 2017. We could see that the climb that it kind of did in that same period as well. So we always have these up periods before the bull market, up periods before the bull market, and then it always corrects. And so when Bitcoin dominance is falling, like we see in the 2017 and 2021 bull markets, it's after a period of extended upside for Bitcoin dominance, and then it crashes and altcoins go crazy towards the upside. So a lot of stuff happening there, a lot of cool stuff that's working in the background. But I think another cool chart, Tivo, was actually one that you showed me. You know, we were talking about it right before the episode. You found a really cool tweet that was kind of fitting the narrative of what we've been referencing. So I think we can flash that up on the screen and talk about it a little bit. But essentially, you know, for the people who have not, there it is. For the people who haven't seen this, this is kind of just saying that everything that's happening here is not too crazy. Like, it's all kind of to be expected, as wild and as, you know, emotional as these moves can get. Alex Thorne is a pretty popular analyst on YouTube. A lot of people are probably already familiar with him. But basically what he's saying here is that the dip or the pullback or whatever we want to call this, is on track historically with pre-halving moves to start the cycle. Now, what does this mean? In simple terms, this move is super textbook in comparison to every other previous market cycle. This isn't anything crazy. And historically, like, this kind of move has happened at the halving, right around the time of the halving. And then afterwards, there's the cycle start. So again, is that a guarantee that we're just going to move up afterwards and that we're just going to appreciate? No. But I think the big point that both Alex and us have been trying to make over the past couple of weeks is that there's always this choppy, nasty period around the time of the halving, and it's followed by one of the most historical runs in any kind of market, you know, that most of us have ever seen. And so, you know, I like this. I'm excited for the halving, needless to say. Because we're expecting to see that happen this Friday. I believe it's this Friday afternoon. You know, maybe Friday night is a more correct term, but it's only a few days away. So we're not that far off. We have a lot of stuff to look forward to. And there's a lot of positive stuff that is happening around the world. And I think that this can kind of, you know, maybe we talk about some of the like catalysts that caused us to crash first. Because a lot of people were like, you know, what in the world could have brought us this low in the first place? And a lot of it stems from geopolitical uncertainty. You know, a lot of us have seen a lot of the stuff that's happening over in like the Middle East and those areas. And what that means is that, you know, when people are looking at that, they're saying, hey, there's some sort of uncertainty there. So the first thing that is going to be affected are all kinds of on-risk asset classes. This can be things like stocks and indices and cryptocurrencies and anything like that. Anything that's deemed an on-risk asset is going to be the first thing to respond to this news. Now, at the time of this news getting released around Friday, Saturday, most of the traditional markets were closed. So the only thing that could react to this news was the crypto markets, because it's really the only 24/7 market that's out there online. And so when people were going and looking and saying, hey, how can I react to this news? Really, the only way that they could have done that is by going and, you know, shorting or selling the crypto markets, because it was the only one open. So I think that it had a bit of a over-exaggerated reaction upon the initial move. You know, it's when we saw the big kind of leg down on both Bitcoin and altcoins. And then, I'm actually going to flash this up on a screen share here just to show everyone that, like, everything is getting a piece of this volatility. And so if we go and we look at like NASDAQ, for example, this thing went off a cliff as well. So the markets opened up for this. You can see that, you know, Friday had a nasty move down. Monday gapped down even more. And then today it's still a red day and it's been struggling to recover any kind of market share. And so just in the past like several trading days, NASDAQ's down almost 4%. Which is pretty hefty. I know crypto people are going to look at that and they're going to go, 4%, you know, that's nothing. We do that on a sideways day. But for a major indice like NASDAQ that is worth like, you know, just trillions and trillions of dollars and is significantly larger than something like Bitcoin, that's a big move. And not only this, you know, it broke the 20-day, it broke the 50-day moving average. This is something that hasn't happened in over like 6 months now. And the gold prices have been going crazy as well. And gold's finally getting a lot of volatility, which has raised some crypto naysayers, right? Like Peter Schiff. And I don't want to spoil too much now because we're going to get into it a little bit later in the show. But there's a lot of stuff to kind of unpack here and what's going on. And all the gold bugs like Peter Schiff are coming out and saying, see, you know, we told you so. But again, I don't want to spoil that. We're going to get into that in just a moment here. So that's kind of some of the stuff that I've seen around like Bitcoin. Again, just it reacting first. It was one of the only markets that was open. And so it's not just Bitcoin here. You know, the stock market's getting wrecked. We saw NASDAQ. We can look at, you know, the S&P. Also, just a lot of this stuff. It's in free fall. It's not just the crypto market. I know it's easy to kind of look at this stuff and say, hey, I feel left out here. You know, why is crypto doing bad? When in reality, that's just the nature of this kind of geopolitical news, is that on-risk assets are always affected first. But I don't think it has to necessarily be a long-term thing.
I was going to say, markets don't like uncertainty, and we couldn't really find a chart for it, but there was plenty of, you know, showcasing of, you know, in the history of uncertainty in the geopolitical sense. The most recent one would be the Russia leading up to Ukraine. Like, I remember the day that that happened, the week that that happened, it was the, you know, a similar, like, just everything sold off, everything, you know, 3 days straight, World War III. And, you know, as sad as these things are in the sense of war, you know, not being good for anybody, you know, it's the market has to digest it. And history shows, this isn't even an opinion, history shows that, you know, after digesting the uncertainty and realizing that, you know, the world will go on, you know, it proves to kind of be a buying opportunity.
No, I agree. You know, no, I think no one's hoping for war, right? But it's one of those things where if the news gets resolved and it's like, hey, all this gets resolved, it goes away, it's a good thing, right? Because now the uncertainty is not there anymore. And if it does turn into something more long-term, again, no one wants to see that. But historically speaking, that's stimulation for the economy. And it typically has a good effect on risk assets prices. So it's not something that really has me too concerned here, but we do have some positive news kind of changing the tempo with the Hong Kong ETFs. Now, if you're an avid crypto listener, then you probably caught this. But the first Bitcoin spot ETFs were approved for Hong Kong. Now, Hong Kong is one of the largest financial markets in the world. I believe that they are a top 10 and they have a huge impact on the Asian markets. So what we've actually seen over here is a lot of like mixed reactions of people saying, hey, this is going to change the game. It's going to be just as big as the United States spot Bitcoin ETFs, or people saying that it's going to mean nothing at all. And I think that there's a happy medium here, understanding that they are going to be effective, but they're not going to be to the same degree of like the stuff that we've seen coming out of the States, right? I mean, we have BlackRock, we have Fidelity, we have Van Eyck, we have all these other people that are just gigantic in terms of size. And so the way that I look at this, and we've had some Bloomberg analysts kind of say the same thing over here, is just, hey, this is going to be big, but it's not going to be as big as the North American one. So they're saying that they're estimating now around $1 billion in the first 2 years. And what we've seen from the North American, or rather the United States Bitcoin ETFs, is that they've done about, I think, 12 to 14 billion in inflows already this year. So just in the last couple months. So again, is it market making? Is it just like market changing? Not necessarily, but it's still a really positive thing to be able to say, hey, we could get $1 billion in additional inflows. And I think the bigger picture that this paints here is that the adoption and the desire for this stuff is still global. It's not something that just, you know, us as listeners in the States or wherever you may be listening from, it's not something that just we desire. There's people on quite literally the opposite side of the world wanting the exact same thing. And so this allows people, and one of the cool things about that tweet is it's saying, you know, around people around the Hong Kong area, even people from Australia and some of these other zones that are more on that side of the world, it allows them to get exposure to this stuff. And again, the market precedent is set here. So now all around the world, people are going to start being able to get exposure to Bitcoin in different ways, whether that is them holding it themselves, whether that is them going through an ETF. People globally want to get their hands on this, and the asset managers globally want to be able to get exposure and give their clients this because the desire is there. So I still view it as a net positive. Again, is it as gigantic as a BlackRock ETF? No, but it's still really big news. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, Tivar, you're kind of seeing the same thing
on 100%. Your end. You know, people are excited to talk about it. And like you said, people are trying to make a bigger deal of it than it may be. But it's just, it's still positive nuggets and a positive bull market marching forward with, you know, a lot of noise around it, a lot of noise around the world, a lot of noise. You know, it's not up only all the time. But when you're down and out, not down and out, but when you're down and having a tough week, you know, you still can find positive news there, like the Hong Kong ETF and the Bitcoin halving, literally 2 days away. So I got the counter up here. I'll flash it up for you.
Yeah, flash it on the screen. This is exciting. So the Bitcoin halving, if you're new and you don't know what it is, don't worry. Essentially, what this means, and yeah, it's 2 days and roughly 7 hours away. And this is something that people have been waiting years for, and it's finally here. And man, I could not be more excited about this. We're actually going to have a little bit of a halving party this Friday. I don't know how much we're going to plug it, but you know, it's the reason I bring it up is because it's a really exciting big moment, and people have seriously been waiting years for this to happen. And all that it means is that the inflation rate of Bitcoin is cut in half. And this happens roughly every 4 years. And, you know, the mining rewards for Bitcoin get cut in half. So I think it was like 6.5. Now it's going to be, or 6.5, 7. Now it's going to be going to something like 3.5. And you get the picture. Every 4 years, it gets cut in half. And so the rewards for the Bitcoin miners also does as well. Now, what that means is that it kind of raises the floor price of Bitcoin because miners have a new break-even price. If they're getting half as many Bitcoin in return over the next 4 years, then arguably the price of Bitcoin needs to double in terms of its break-even floor. So I was looking at some numbers actually yesterday about this, and the new break-even price for Bitcoin is estimated to be roughly $50,000. And so the breakdown of this is that about $30,000 of that $50,000 floor price is going to come from fixed costs. So just, you know, fixed operating costs. And then the additional $20,000 is going to come from variable costs, such as, you know, things like electricity, for example. So that's how they're getting this number of around a $50,000 floor. They're saying, okay, what are the operating costs? What are the fixed costs? That's going to be roughly $50,000. What are the variable costs, such as electricity? That's going to be roughly $20,000. And that's where we're getting this new price estimate of a $50,000 floor for Bitcoin being at. And historically speaking, whenever Bitcoin has approached that new price floor, which again, it's not here yet, but we'll see that happen on Friday, late Friday. Historically, that has been one of the best buying opportunities to accumulate Bitcoin around that price floor. And we saw that happen in, you know, previous market cycles, especially during around the time of the COVID crash, when Bitcoin like really, really dipped. You know, when Bitcoin fell below the floor, it was like, hey, this is a fire sale, and it saw a parabolic recovery afterwards.
And then if you see something like that, I remember hearing about like the miners going offline, like the miners just turn off their machines if it goes too low, because it just doesn't, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to produce at that level. And then same thing, if the price isn't high enough, they're not going to sell at a loss unless, I guess, they're going into bankruptcy. But for the most part, you know, it could be an interesting, you know, price point to keep an eye on. And I've heard, so I've seen online, again, I don't know how to personally, how to generate these numbers with the, you know, the formula, but I've seen everything from 50 to 70, to be honest, on multiple you know, people and respectable outlets of, you know, influencers and, you know, people that kind of study this stuff. So I've seen 50 to 70 as a floor place.
Yeah. And you know, it's really cool because I looked at this maybe a year or two ago, and I believe the theory is that the floor price would be around like 30,000 or like 40,000. And it's cool checking back now. And you're right. Like a lot of the predictions are like 50, 60, 70. I was talking to Matt, one of the analysts over here, and he was saying that, you know, he's seen 60,000 I've seen 50,000. You're now saying that you've seen some people even go up to 70,000. And the good news here is that the higher the floor price, kind of the better for all of us over here. So exciting stuff. I mean, man, the halving is just a moment away. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. I truly do believe that up until this point, we have been riding off of other catalysts, off of retail interest, off of institutional interest, off of the Bitcoin ETFs working as a catalyst, you know, all these other things. And now I think we're finally entering in to the first inning of the Bitcoin halving as a catalyst, which is historically the most impactful and important catalyst of them
dare,
all.
Dare I say, I think it's not, it would be interesting to see like a sell the news event because markets are obviously forward looking. And I think you have so many more speculators that have been in for the ETF. And then again, same thing that I always bring up is you hear the talking heads on TV, you know, that are holding Bitcoin, but are not necessarily true Bitcoin believers start mouthing like, you know, oh, I'm here, BlackRock's here, marketing. I'm here to for the marketing power of BlackRock. There's the halving event. And some of them say halvening. And there's a lot of people in the market, I think, that right now that might have price this in their own models that aren't necessarily want to be true holders of Bitcoin. And so similar to when the ETF, you remember back in January, once the ETF got approved, there was that 3-4 days of a massive sell-off and people started like, what's going on? And then, you know, quick reversal up through all new all-time highs. And so I think the geopolitical thing that happened last weekend also gives kind of a teetering little, you know, skepticism of where this price might go. But I wouldn't, again, just like you said in the beginning of the show, technically there's room to the upside, there's room to the downside. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, next week after this Bitcoin halving thing goes through that it gives a lot of kind of more of the speculators and traders that are newer to the space to kind of just be like, all right, we made a move and take some profits and to sell the news.
I think that's a great example. I mean, look at the Bitcoin ETFs, like you said. They, upon impact, just sell off, prices were falling, everyone was freaking out. And then you zoom out to like a week or two after that sell off and prices just went crazy. And we could see the same kind of reaction with the halving. I mean, we saw it during the ETFs and everyone's like, oh, it was a sell the news event. You know, the market's over, this and that. And everyone was freaking out and over-exaggerating. And then we just skyrocketed in price afterwards. And it stopped all the weak hands out and they all got wrecked and all the bears did too. And the halving is probably, in my opinion, I think the halving is going to have a similar reaction. Now, it could be a little bit more long term. You know, it might not be as immediate, but I think the long term play is still there. And I think that there's going to be people looking back on, you know, a $60,000 Bitcoin and saying, man, I wish that I would have gotten my hands on Bitcoin at 60K, just as like the last time around, people were like, man, I wish I would have gotten my hands on Bitcoin at like 20K. So
yeah, we live in such a 24-hour news cycle that, you know, no matter what happens in over the course of like, if you zoom out on Bitcoin, like what an awesome run over the last year, 6 months, 3 months. But then, yeah, the last month has had a lot of chop. And, you know, if you pick out specific weeks or 5 days in that month period, there's, you know, flash crashes or whatever you want to call them, and the news picks up on that and pumps that out, and it's just it's hard to take a longer term picture sometimes when you live in this just constant content from X to TV, and sometimes the narratives that get spun up, even though it's positive that there's a lot of talk around Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ETFs, a lot of these hosts just still skew it so negatively. So you just got to back up to your belief and be a long-term believer.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things that we've seen here recently is the whole Bitcoin versus gold debate heating up again. And our guy, Peter Schiff, who we've mentioned about on here, you know, for a little bit, he had this almost bullish stance on Bitcoin, where it seemed like he was finally pivoting from being super bearish on it to saying, hey, you know, maybe there's value there. It's not for me, but, you know, people can make money with it. And now he's kind of going back to this idea of gold is supreme. Bitcoin is
He's never been like bullish believer on like the technology or the use case for it, but like he had to bend the knee from like 15,000 to 60,000 of like, all right, I guess if you bought it here, yes, you could have made money, but now it's time to transfer into gold. And he's just really anti-holding or being a part of Bitcoin in any way. But he did have to bend the knee to be like, all right, cool. Yeah, you could have made money.
Yeah, and he was just on TV talking about this. In fact, let's go ahead and roll the clip.
Yeah, so just to set it up, this is Fox with Charles Payne. And Peter Schiff was on with Charles Payne talking about gold and Bitcoin. And then Natalie Brunell, who is a crypto influencer, big presence on X, they brought her in. I guess they didn't tell Natalie or Peter that they were doing this, but they, Charles Payne's producers kind of created this like quick, debate between the two, and it got pretty heated. So here's a 1 minute clip of what I thought was the best part.
If Natalie were smart, as soon as this segment is over, she would sell all of her Bitcoin. Because if she doesn't sell it now, she's going to sell it later at a much lower price.
All right. Well, them's what we call fighting words. And I think they're similar drivers for both. But let me introduce the two. Natalie. Natalie, meet Peter. Peter, meet Natalie. All right, Natalie, some choice words for you. What would you tell Peter?
Oh, I know, Peter. And you know what? Bitcoiners don't feel the need to constantly attack gold because we're not threatened by gold. And the reason that we have this failed fiat experiment that has impoverished our nation is because of the defects of gold. The fact that it's not easily portable, it's not easily verifiable, it doesn't offer instant final global settlement. And so you know what? Centralized authorities hijacked it, they papered over it, and we have a system of leverage and rehypothecation that hurts the working class. Bitcoin is immune to all of that. It is the savings account for billions of people that we really need and can most rely on, and it offers that final global settlement that we need. And so gold is the analog version of sound money, but Bitcoin is the digital version, and that's why it's going to be the faster horse in this race.
Yeah, so I mean, I thought that was a great bit. It's actually, if you want to go find the full one, you could definitely go find it on X. I think it was like a 5 minute segment, and they sparred back and forth. But I thought, obviously she's great, well-spoken, knows her points. My favorite point is the paperization of gold. Because like you could say like, oh, I'm a gold bug. I own a bunch of gold. It's like, well, do you really? Like you own it in your brokerage account, which says, you know, basically it's an email or a piece of paper that says you own the right to this amount of gold. But like where is that gold?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I also like that she said that like Bitcoin and crypto people don't feel the need to attack gold, but gold people have the need to attack Bitcoin or the want to attack Bitcoin. And let me just preface this by saying, I'm a precious metals holder. I hold precious metals. I like gold. I think gold is good. It has a place. But to argue that gold is, you know, now superior to Bitcoin is just wrong. And I actually want to throw up a chart to kind of signify this, because ironically, I was supposed to do the same thing with Peter Schiff a couple of years ago. But something happened and it ended up just being a one-way conversation with me and some of the hosts. But I was supposed to be on a similar panel to this. So I was fully prepared to have, you know, kind of an exact same and similar conversation. And so what we've actually seen is that if we show, you know, the Bitcoin chart, let's just show, you know, maybe the last like few months here. In fact, let's just go year to start, maybe January to where we're at today. Or to where the high was, it's about 93%. If we want to go even farther back, and let's just say, hey, just since, you know, 2023, so about a year, let's do a 1 year. Year to date, Bitcoin is up about 216%. Well, if we go and we look at gold, for example, and I want to zoom out to a weekly chart because we're really going to get the big picture here. And if we zoom out on the gold chart and we say, hey, if we measure the lowest point that gold has been in the last decade, the last 10 years, going all the way back to November of 2015, about 9 years ago, and we measure up to the current price of gold from top to bottom, again, from the lowest price in the last decade to the highest price, it's about 130% reward, which means that if you would have bought the perfect bottom in the last decade and you would have held it to the highest point, you would have made 130% over the last 10 years, which means that you would have gotten on average a 13% reward. Is that bad? No. Again, I think it's good. 130%, great move. I think gold's a solid investment, but you can't compare it to Bitcoin that has done, you know, it's done double what gold has done in the last decade in a perfect world. You know, Bitcoin's done that in a year. Not only has it done that, it's done twice that in a year's time frame, what gold was able to do in 10 years time frame. So I don't even think that there is a comparison. I mean, if we were to take the 10-year, you know, expectation of gold versus Bitcoin, Bitcoin wins. If we take the 1 year, Bitcoin still wins. And so I just don't know how that there's any kind of a comparison to say that gold is now just the superior asset. I think that they're different. I think that they both have a time and place. Again, I'm a fan of both. I hold both metals and Bitcoin, but I think when you're looking at price appreciation, I just don't understand how someone like him can still argue and hate on Bitcoin here. I mean, it's been outperforming gold consistently for so long. I mean, since its inception. And so there are these, you know, peaks and these troughs, but I don't know. That's the way that I look at it. I think that they're kind of two different assets, but I really don't know how there's any kind of an argument here that, you know, gold is just so much better. And, you know, gold finally goes on this run of, I mean, what is it? In the last maybe month or two here, it goes on a run of 21%. And now you have people like Peter Schiff going out and saying, oh, I told you so. I told you so. You know, Bitcoin's moved down 10%. Gold's moved up 10%. And it's just, I mean,
the
like,
one, the
right,
1 year on gold is 20%.
Yeah. So it's like, it just has a hard time keeping up. And again, I think it has a time and a place. And, you know, gold's a solid store of value over the long term. And, you know, there just are complications with it. And that was one of the things that you kind of mentioned, Tebow, is if you look at like paper price and physical price, you have two different things because you have a paper price and then you have the physical price, but the physical prices always have premiums on them. And that was like one of the big issue with precious metals, especially gold and silver over the last like 5 years or so now, is that the premiums on them have been so far apart from the paper price that it makes trading them and holding them a pain. Because you'll go in, and I remember at one point, especially on silver, the premiums on them were almost as much as the underlying asset itself. So if you wanted to go and you wanted to buy, you know, an ounce of silver or whatever it was, and I think it was like 20, 30 bucks, some of them could have $20, $15 premiums on them, which is just insane. So I don't know. It's a complicated situation, but I think both are positive. I think that...
Sorry, if you had to guess, what would you think Peter Schiff's net worth is?
Oh man.
Just a ballpark.
Let's go 20 million.
Only 20? Interesting. No, I'll give it. No, 100. Hey, it was your guess. I don't know. I just see him all over. He manages over a billion, and he's always on TV and talks his book. Like I was okay putting him in like a couple hundred million, like the 300 to 500 net worth. I was way wrong. Yeah. So this, and again, this is just a quick Google, so we don't know what the real number is, but I'm seeing 80, I'm seeing 70. I thought that would be a lot more. That just how, I mean, he holds himself very professionally, obviously, and 80 million is nothing to sneeze at. But I don't know. I the way he talks down about Bitcoin, I was like, maybe he just never needs to make another buck, which, you know, you don't if you have that much money, I guess, but I don't know. There's a lot more people in the billionaire camp and 100 millionaire camp that like Bitcoin, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, I think he got in like a while ago. And again, I could be wrong here, but I think he got in like before the 2000s.
Maybe that's why he hates Bitcoin so much, because he knows, he did the calculation. If he put like 1 million into Bitcoin, he would have doubled his net worth.
Yeah. Exactly. And like, he's made good money, but could he made money pretty much? Could he have made more money? Because I think he is an intelligent guy, but I think now his whole personality is built around gold. And so I think he has a little bit of regret saying, hey, I mean, like you said, Tebow, he's everywhere. People think that he probably has a bigger net worth than he does. He's certainly made a great life for himself. But, you know, had he put that money into almost anything else, he probably would be even more wealthy. Whether that was like the NASDAQ or the S&P or, I mean, heck, Bitcoin even, he could be in that like several hundred million, maybe even a billionaire. So I don't know. I think maybe that's where some of his saltiness stems from. I think maybe some of it is a lack of understanding. I think some of it is also just saying, hey, I could have put my money in so many different things and been drastically more wealthy. But you reach a certain point, right? I mean, when you're his age with $100 million, do you really need a billion versus $100 million? I think that's kind of where I'm like, you know.
No, 100%. And he's obviously talking his book because he's a money manager and he wants people to be in his funds. I thought it was a funny point. Sense. I was more like not shocked. I just had, I guess, a bigger net worth for the guy. But hey, he seems fun. He seems well spoken. He seems like a guy, like Peter Schiff is definitely a guy that I want to go and have a nice scotch with and just talk about life.
Yeah.
So open invite for my guy, Peter Schiff. We can hang out sometime.
No, I mean, I agree. And we'd love to have him on here too. I think he's a smart guy. I think he is. But like you said, he's speaking for his books. You know, his whole business model and his personality is built around gold. So it's hard to say that, hey, my whole livelihood is around this, but something else is actually better, right? It'd be almost like hypocritical. It would probably make investors leave. It wouldn't make any sense. So I totally get where he's coming from. And, you know, no ill manners, certainly. And there's always two sides of every argument. And I think listening to both is always important for everyone to make an educated decision as well. So, I mean, man, a lot happening here as we kind of go into the halving, which is, again, just a few days away. But that's going to pretty much round us up for today's episode, everyone. So a lot of volatility, a lot of news happening. And, you know, prepare your stomachs because we are likely going to continue to get quite a bit of volatility, not only around this week of the halving itself, but even in the weeks following the halving, we could get quite a bit of volatility. So just kind of prepare yourselves mentally. You know, again, that could be to the upside. It could be to the downside. We talked about the support levels that need to hold for Bitcoin to kind of continue moving up here. We talked about what could happen if it breaks. If we, you know, continue back up here and we do hold this level, it means Bitcoin could have a $10,000 move to the upside. So there's certainly a lot of things to kind of watch out for. The altcoin market is, you know, just seeing extra volatility in regards to everything that's happening. So that's going to round us up. Thank you all for watching. Again, if you like the content that we make these market updates every single week for all of you. And all that we ask is that, you know, you hit the like button, you hit the subscribe button, you'll leave us a review if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any of that stuff. You know, we want to start shouting out people who leave us comments and leave us reviews. We're going to start trying to feature those on the podcast just as a little token of appreciation, saying, hey, thanks for supporting us. So that's going to round us out for this one. We're going to be back at the same time, same place next week in a post-halving crypto environment.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.